Do we realize how important trust is in our lives? Trust is the foundation, that very solid foundation, that when you have it, you're able to build the tallest buildings upon it. Trust is that love, that unconditional nurturing that cultivates trust to be able to rely on someone, to feel secure, to feel that you are validated, that you're valuable. This trust, above all, begins from our young childhood in our parents' home. When you have that element that you trust your parents, you trust your siblings, you trust your environment, it gives you those bearings, the pillars upon which relationships can be built throughout your entire life. You don't really appreciate trust until you're lacking or not having it, as is usually the case. Trust is critical. It is the foundation of everything in life. It goes hand in hand with love, of course. But the question is, how do you build trust in your life? Especially if you did not have it, or not have it completely at a younger age. How do you build trust? So please join me as we discuss 5 ways to build trust. Hi, this is Simon Jacobson, and we will be speaking about 5 ways to build trust. This program is dedicated in honor of the birthday of Eliezer Slavutin. Trust. As it is with all important things in life, vital things in life, you don't really appreciate it until you're lacking it. It's like we don't really appreciate the oxygen we breathe, the heart beating, all the other factors that really allow us to exist, to survive, to thrive. But then when you see someone struggling to breathe, or in any other way, you suddenly realize, wow, this is a miracle, this is a gift. Trust is exactly the same thing. It doesn't feel like anything when you have it. Everything just is in order. Just like you don't feel your heart beating most of the time, unless it's beating quickly or there's a problem, God forbid. But do we realize how important trust is and how much impact it has on us, both the positive when we have it and the negative when we're lacking it? Like a foundation of a building, you don't see the foundation, but the entire building rests upon it. If the foundation is wavering or in any way insecure, it's going to affect directly the entire structure. So trust is really the glue that connects us, where we know we can rely on someone, where we know that we can depend on them. We know that we're being validated by them. You just trust them. Very often, our trust is abused. We trust someone in our naivete, or for whatever reason, maybe sometimes even being manipulated, and then we're deeply disappointed. And we know what a devastating feeling that is, because you allowed yourself to be open, to be vulnerable. When you do have it, and it's a healthy trust and the right person, there's a certain security that's invisible. May often not even be, most of the time, even be noticed, but it's there. And you can rely on it. And like I said, like a foundation of a building. It really is the foundation of relationships, of even our trusting ourselves and trusting our commitments and not wavering. All dependent on these fundamental factors that define what trust is. But the question is, how do you build trust? Especially when you're lacking it, when you don't feel you trust people. And it could be for good reason. Where you've trusted and you've been hurt. You've been violated. You've been abused. Or even if it's not for necessarily always legitimate reasons, but still that's your feeling. And we can't invalidate that either. So how does one build trust? And what are the components? What are the ingredients? So let's go through five steps, which can all be also recognized and in the acronym of the very word trust, which is five letters. T-R-U-S-T. Which will help us also remember and be able to access and retrieve these very fundamental principles. But before we get into the specifics, let's talk about the trust a little more, about what its true value is and its importance. Let's play the devil's advocate, even though we don't believe in the devil. Now, what would life be without trust? And why do we really need it that much? You could say I'm a self-contained person. And you know what? If I can find someone I trust, great. If not, not. It's like in a business. You may be able to find a partner that you can trust. If I can't, I'll figure it out on my own. Or, you know, I may have to compromise something because I need that person's money or investment or advice or whatever it may be. So why is it so fundamental? It really goes back to the very concept of love and attachment in our lives. You can ask the same question. Why do we need attachments? Why do we need connections? And yet we see, and this is just a fact, and we'll explain in a moment why, but let's just talk about the fact that children, that in any way, their connection and attachment to their parents at very early age is in some way severed, God forbid, or compromised, it will affect their entire life. It doesn't mean they can't do things about it, but it will affect them. It shakes the very foundation because we are human beings. We are not isolated creatures. We're not an island unto ourselves. We have plenty of our own resources. But part of those resources is also the need to interact. When you think of a person living on an island and never finding another person, you can die from loneliness. And I don't mean necessarily physically dying, which may also be part of it, but dying in spirit. The idea of not having a relationship, not having a connection, if you think about it, seems completely antithetical to what it means to be human. You might as well ask the question, why do you need to exist altogether? So existence is synonymous with relationships. You just don't want to have a relationship where you're completely dependent on another. And therefore, annihilated, your own self is annihilated in the presence of another. That's also unhealthy. So it's a balance between a self, but also a certain interaction, if you want a symbiosis, a cross-pollination. And this isn't just true for human beings, it's true for the nature, for the environment, for our very human bodies. It would be like saying all the organs and the limbs in your body would say, I don't need you. The heart is self-contained, the brain is self-contained, the legs are self-contained, the liver is self-contained, the pancreas is self-contained. But we know that's not how it works. Because the truth is all of the universe, as well as the microcosm of the human being, is like is integrally connected as one. It's just many different components, but it's components of one machine. And when it's working healthily, that machine is made up of all these details. Each one needs to do its function and play its role, but also is dependent on the others, like a grand symphony. Now the question why it was made that way, why God created us that way, that is really deserves its own conversation, but I'll just say a few lines just about that. Because that's the whole purpose of existence, is to find unity within the diversity. And within diversity that can sometimes lead to divisiveness, is to find that inherent unity, that integral unity. You see, that's the whole search of science, to find the unifying elements. So that's the very purpose, is to see the world not as fragmented, disjointed, but actually a unified whole, a harmony within diversity. And as such, that's why it's so critical to us, because we cannot be complete without the others, and they cannot be complete without us. So it's a combination, balance of both. That's why you'll find in the Bible, you find that God created Adam and Eve as one, an androgynous creature, human being, male and female, he created them. God created them, and then split them into two, and then they seek out each other. In it lies the whole story of love, the whole story of life itself. So connection, attachment, and it's, you can say, postulate or derivative, if you wish. Trust is integral to us. Because trust means the ability to trust another. Because if you can't trust the other, how can you work together with that person? How can you benefit from them, and how can they benefit from you? So trust is actually the definition of a true loving relationship. If someone says, I love you, but I don't trust you, what does that mean? So therefore, trust is such a critical piece in the entire picture. But let's go back. Once you know that, then you know it's like critical for success in life to have that element of trust. But you'll say, one second, we live in a very mercenary world, in a very hostile world, with full of self-interest conflicting with one another. People will do many things in the name of greed and step on others, corrupt individuals, duplicity, deceit, so many of the negative things that define humanity as well, which actually not only is not trust, it's antithetical in every way. It undermines any element of trust. In other words, when you grow into an adult and you lose some of your naivete, you don't start thinking, oh, I trust everybody. Everybody's innocent until proven guilty. You start not trusting people. And they need to prove themselves to be trusted. I'm not saying we have to go to extremes. So in a way, when we're innocent and we're not no better, we trust. That's what children do. They trust until they're hurt, until they're forced not to trust, sadly and tragically. But we don't want to go to the other extreme either. And yet we live in a world where you say, who can I trust? Especially look into the world today with media, politics, the polarization, what people will do, the way they character assassinate, personalize. Not just two different opinions, intelligent opinions, and let's discuss it. So it all adds to this distrust and the mistrust, the distrust of those around us, people around us, entities. What do they want from me? Someone calls you, what are they selling? What are they marketing? There's always that defense mechanism comes into play, especially when you've been burned and hurt. So it's not a simple matter to find, we'll call it that unity, that connection and attachment and the trust that is so vital. And yet it remains to be a vital component in life. So it's not something we should ignore. The fact that many of us may not have much trust in our lives doesn't mean our lives are in good shape. What we've probably done is compensated. You find here little pockets of trust, short-term relationships, always keeping the back door open, always ready to run and take flight when in danger. In other words, no total commitment. That's what many of us do. Many of us never really allow ourselves to let our guard down. And we figure out a way to maneuver. But maneuvering, if you're honest with yourself, no, is not necessarily thriving. It means you're managing. Or we distract ourselves. We find areas where we can succeed. How many people are driven by ambition, by money, by success in so many areas? And it's not because they're building trust. They're replacing it with a success in this particular area. Someone makes a lot of money. Oh, now I know. I can trust my judgment, my ingenuity. I have the money to fall back on. I'm not dependent on others. But trust is much more than not being dependent on others. Trust is actually having a full relationship with yourself and with others in a way that you can really actualize all your potential. So yes, we do numb ourselves and we do distract ourselves. And this can be through various different areas. It can be things that are more neutral. It can be things that are more destructive, different addictions. An addiction at the end of the day, as I've discussed many times, is an attachment disorder. You're attached, but to the wrong thing. You need attachment, and you get obsessed with that attachment and consume with it, but it's not healthy for you. And it's replacing the attachment that you should have in life, which is the healthy love, the healthy commitments, the healthy trusts. You begin to trust the wrong things, trust the wrong people, trust the wrong activities, wrong actions, whether it's gambling or drugs or opioids or alcohol or sex, or other things that cause us to become addicted to them. They're all crutches that are, in a sense, replacing a misplaced form of trust. So the picture, when you paint it this way, doesn't sound somewhat bleak, doesn't sound so great. But my friends, that's not the case. The good news is that there's a part of us that remains always unscathed, uninjured, because it precedes all the hurt that may have happened to us. It precedes the break, the disappointments, the broken promises, the dashed dreams that may have occurred in our lives. And that's the part we want to access. And when you can access that, even if there's been some form of breach of trust, you then discover the true self, your inner self, that part of you that allows you to first trust yourself and trust others. And there are indeed five key components in this regard. T-R-U-S-T. And we'll spell them out and then explain each one. So the first T is for truthfulness. The R is for responsibility. The U is for understanding. The S is for security. And the final T is for tenacity. So let's go through each one of them and you'll see how they're critical. And when you focus on each one in your own life, to discover it first, are you a trustworthy person if you have these five components? As well as looking at another person, you'll have something to hold on to. We'll have handles. Not just, oh, do I trust this person or not? Am I going by instinct, by intuition? No, there are real specific ingredients, real specific elements that are necessary. So let's begin with the first truth, truthfulness. Truthfulness means being honest, not lying to yourself, not lying to others. One of the first things that happen when a person starts losing trust is they begin to lie. I remember growing up in school. So there was a family that I knew well, who grew up in the same community, no names. And I remember I had one of the older sons was in my class. His younger brothers were in lower classes. And they were very lively. But even from early on, I recognized there was always something they were hiding. And I don't even know if it was deliberate. It just felt that way. As I grew older, I came to discover, yes, they grew up in a very abusive home, a father that was violent and angry and literally physically hurt them. And what they began to do was not tell the truth about their lives. Like, let's have a play date. There was always an excuse why we can't do it in our home. Now, I understand in retrospect why they didn't want to. But there was a tremendous amount of shame, a tremendous amount of hurt. They wanted to avoid it. And this is not an accusation or finger pointing, not at them, obviously. But I saw literally, and as the years passed and I kept observing it, and then observing it in many other scenarios, how what happens is we start creating another narrative. Because the narrative of our lives is not comfortable, to put it mildly. It's something you don't trust. And when there's no trust, what happens is you begin to lie. You lie about yourself, you lie about your family, you lie about everything. Because it's the only place where you find false security in this false narrative. Because the true narrative is just too painful. What some call shame, an unhealthy shame. John Bradshaw was one of the first pioneers that talked about this in the early 70s. The shame growing up as the son of an alcoholic, having to hide the fact from his friends, and frankly from himself even. Because you want your father to be a hero. So that's one example, a few examples. There are many more. So truthfulness is critical. And that's why you find that in all healing, one of the first things, maybe the first, is acknowledgement. Yes, I have a problem. If you can't say that, you'll never get anywhere. Awareness is half the cure. And awareness means being honest and true to yourself and to others. Being able to break the silence, to break the shame, to open up. And especially with the people that you're supposed to be trusting in your lives, in your life. Because if you can't speak openly with them, can you really trust? You can fake it. You can make believe I trust you, but you're not really trusting. So trust means you're able to tell the truth and you know you won't be criticized for it. You won't be judged. You won't be hurt. Because that's another reason we don't want to tell the truth. We think if someone really knew about me, they'd never trust me. They'd never want to be with me. They'd never love me. And you start thinking about the same way the others. I can't trust that person. I don't really know what is a story, because I know in my life, it didn't work out that well. I'm using maybe an extreme example, or maybe not that extreme. But it's clear you can apply this even to more milder forms of disappointments. So trust is vital and connected with truth. The first T, the truth. Now you'll say, well, I'm not ready to open up. Okay, fine. But at least you know what you look for. At least know that you're not opening up. That's also being truthful. That you're acknowledging that, no, not everything is just hunky-dory. Everything is fine. There's issues. So finding someone, even if it's not someone in a romantic fashion or in a personal way, but even a mentor, a coach, a therapist, someone you can consult and talk to them openly may be the safest way to go, because there's not much to lose. You're not talking. If it's someone that's very close to you, you could say, well, you know what, if I open up, who knows what will happen. But if it's someone more detached, we'll call it emotionally detached, but someone you can relate to. Now, I know it's a catch-22. People say, if I can't trust, how am I going to find a mentor to trust? Well, this is the work that needs to be done. So number one is truthfulness and recognizing, where do you stand on that spectrum? From 1 to 10, how truthful are you? And I don't mean necessarily always a blatant lie. There are white lies, there's innuendo, there's distractions. No, truth is not just a black and white, did I tell a truth or I tell a lie? Sometimes the way we mask things, the smoke screens of our lives, that's T. The R is for responsibility. Responsibility means that you're responsible to yourself and to the other. Without that, you don't have trust. Responsibility includes reliability. It includes accountability. I remember reading, I'm not sure who coined it, that trust is not built on perfection, it's built on accountability. Often, when we've been hurt, so we look for someone that's not going to hurt us. So we're looking for someone that's not going to make a mistake. Someone without flaws. But we know that's not realistic. But many of us do that. We're looking to be saved by someone, a knight in shining armor, who will save us. What you're looking for is not perfection. There is no such thing. You're looking for accountability. That even if someone you love and loves you or cares about you makes a mistake, they won't cover it up. They won't be untruthful. They'll be honest and they'll be accountable. They'll say, this is what happened. I want to apologize. So that you can begin to rely on. That you can begin to trust, because you see there is someone that is responsible. The same thing in our childhoods. One of the first signs of parents that are not become not trustworthy for a child is that they're not responsible. The parent says, I'm coming home. They don't come home. Promises are broken. The love that you expect is not forthcoming, for whatever the reason may be. And it could be a vicious cycle, because those parents themselves are hurt children. Hurt people. But nevertheless, the bottom line is the lack of responsibility creates a lack of trust. When you know someone says to you, I'll be there a certain time, and I'm committed to you, and they show up and they deliver, that begins to build trust. Now, once there may be, again, imperfection, there can be a breach of that. But if there's accountability and an apology, and it's not consistently, you know, if a person keeps saying promises and then they apologize all the time and they continue to be inconsistent, that also is not going to build trust. So we're talking about a relationship where you know you could rely, but you know what? People make mistakes and then they correct themselves. So overall, there's a responsible partner that you have here. A responsible parent, a responsible partner, a responsible spouse, a responsible friend. So responsibility is the R of trust. Next is understanding. Understanding isn't just understanding another person. It's applying yourself to want to understand someone. And we've all been guilty of this. Now, people come to me, for instance, to speak and they're for counseling about any particular area. I try to be completely focused there for them. But there are times you get distracted for whatever reason. When you get distracted, what's happening is you're not really giving the person the dignity to be able to speak to you. And I think about it sometimes. I say, you know, I wasn't really there for whatever reason. I don't have an excuse always. I'm not looking for an excuse. Understanding means that you have the patience and you have the ability to put yourself aside, understand another person, that cultivates trust. When a person sees, they see it in your eyes, they see it in your body language, that you're there. It's an understanding. It's also an understanding of perhaps certain vulnerabilities we may have. When you understand someone's vulnerability, that in turn also cultivates trust. You know, the people right away feel I'm being judged. How often do I see I'm sitting with someone and they, you know, they feel like they say something and they look at me. Am I judging them? Am I going to criticize them? In other words, I'm not really understanding them. I'm not putting myself in their shoes. Now, understanding doesn't mean you have to agree with that person. Understanding doesn't mean that whatever they do is good and healthy. But it means you're giving them the space, the dignity, the empathy, if you wish, of having a connection. When parents don't have time for their children, children come home from school, a child is crying, parent pushes it aside, and time and again, it means you're not understanding your child. And even if you do apply yourself and you start criticizing the child for not doing this or not doing that, you're not putting yourself in their shoes. That's not empathy. So understanding really means applying yourself, putting yourself in that person's shoes, identifying with them. And that is the third element critical in all trust, the you of trust. Next is security. Security is very clear. We talked before about a foundation. If a foundation of a building is not secure and solid and unwavering, the building will be compromised, period. And the same thing is in relationships. Providing security. Do the people around you feel secure with you? Now, of course, it's interconnected and overlapping with the other elements of that we spoke about. Truth, responsibility, understanding all cultivates an element of being secure. But here we're focusing on security per se. Making others feel secure. And knowing it's your responsibility to make them feel secure. And vice versa. To looking at someone that you feel secure with. You feel secure in their hands. You know, this can even be not necessarily always emotional. Even the fact you go to a master, an expert, you just feel that they know what they're doing. It's an expert. You feel secure, you can rest assured, you can sleep peacefully knowing someone is at the helm. That's security. And security, of course, is critical in building and cultivating trust. So ask yourself that question about, do you offer such security to those that you care about, to those that you interact with? And this is also between employer and employee and between co-workers and between you and your clients and your clients and you. Are you making them feel secure? Do they feel that way? So everything we've talked about and all the T, R, U, and now S apply to all relationships. Keep that in mind. And finally, the last T, tenacity. Tenacity, consistency. That's not a one-time thing. You know, often you'll find, and this is both a beautiful thing, but also a very tragic thing. Someone will say, my father loved me deeply. Take me to the park. Other outings we took. But then there were times he just was not there. That's what was so painful. It was not consistent. I didn't know when I would see love and when I would just see no one. Or even worse, I'd see pain. So if it's a stranger, you don't expect anything better. Tenacity is the idea of consistently being there for someone. So the question is your own tenacity and the tenacity of others around you. Again, there's overlap with the others, but it's its own particular ingredient, critical. The tenacity, the consistency. You see, and children, for example, know they live in a home. They know where their bed is, where their bedroom is. They know their schedules, that when they wake up in the morning, breakfast, lunch, dinner, school. These routines are critical for trust because you begin to trust the routine. You can rely on it. You know, certain time the bus is arriving. Certain time my parents are picking me up from school. There's just different schedules. So these things all create a consistent routine. So even though routines that sometimes need also to be refreshed. You don't want to live a life, a monotonous life just of routines. But routines have power, the power of consistency, the power of reliability. And that's where the tenacity comes into play. So now when you take these five, truthfulness, responsibility, understanding, security, and our tenacity, you have the five ingredients of how to build trust in your life. You have something to measure it by, something to seek out. And you'll find that you can perhaps one have one more than the other in certain relationships. But that doesn't mean you can't work on the others as well. So the truth is we need all five elements. And each one contributes its particular also ingredient to make this a full-bodied and a complete full-dimensional trusting relationship. Going back to the original point, trust is critical for all success in life. To really spread your wings, expand your horizons, reach higher states of consciousness and awareness, and really actualize to what you're capable of becoming. So no matter what has happened in the past of your life, which has to be acknowledged, do not be stuck there, because that's not the beginning and end of the narrative. Your narrative began before, long before you may have been hurt. Began 9 months in your mother's womb, where there the fetus, you, were able to trust what was happening. Every second was accounted for. You were being protected, fed, nourished, nurtured. Hopefully this continued even after you emerged into this world after birth. Even if it didn't completely continue, these are the ingredients. So if they're lacking, you know now what you need to compensate, what you need to fill. You don't want to replace it with anything unhealthy. You want to find the healthy outlets for finding truth, responsibility, understanding, security and tenacity in your life, as well as giving it to others. And with that, we help build a world where we can trust each other more than we ever have before. And we do it step by step. It doesn't have to be cold turkey. And as we build it, it can extend. The more trust you have in your life, the more it can spill over with other people, where you can become a more trustworthy person instead of this vicious cycle of dog eats dog, where there's one person doesn't trust another, and that in turn ripples into another not having distrust. And distrust then becomes a contagious, unfortunate virus. You can also have the opposite. When there's trust, trust breeds trust and breeds more trust to more people, and that can spill over and ultimately have that ripple butterfly effect to create a much more trustworthy world where we can find harmony within our diversity. Now, of course, this is a big topic, and it's more than just 5 points. There's a lot more that needs to be done, the actual work. But I think this lays the ground, or the foundations, you can say, for the key principles. So, for more information, just go to meaningfullife.com. This whole week we've been doing the theme of trust, and for the record, every week we do another theme. And you'll find many more materials. Please check it out, share with others, subscribe to our offerings, including to our growing YouTube channel. And I'd love to hear your feedback, your thoughts, your comments. So this has been Simon Jacobson. Meaningfullife.com is our website. It's been an honor, and hopefully we can build more trust between ourselves. And remember, the opposite of distrust is not necessarily trust. So I'm not looking just to get rid of distrust. It's about building an actual positive connection. Trust is more than the absence of distrust, is essentially what I was trying to say. Be well and be blessed. Thank you so much.
This program is brought to you by the Meaningful Life Center. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at meaningfullife.com/donate.